You're listening to the full uncut audio from the intern Twitter debate held earlier this summer at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society between the summer interns. You can hear an excerpt from this debate, about 10 minutes of it, in the Twitter episode on this week's Radio Berkman at blogs.law.harvard.edu/mediaberkman.
So welcome everyone to the first, hopefully annual, Berkturn debate. Our topic today is whether or not Twitter is a revolutionary force for social communication. And we have two Berkman interns on either side. Catherine White and Soya Jacobs will be arguing that Twitter is indeed a revolutionary force for social communication. And Andrew Moshinia and Chris Peterson will be arguing that it is not. I took liberty of looking up their Twitter accounts this afternoon. And I think it's pretty telling that both Sawyer and Catherine tweeted about the upcoming debate, where Andrew has no account and Chris's last tweet was just, muffins. So, the way we're going to run this debate is we're going to have a silent vote at the beginning. Joey's going to pass out ballots and you guys can vote yes or no, and then we'll have another one at the very end to see who has changed the most minds. We're also going to start with 3-minute opening statements from each debater, alternating between pro and con. Then we'll give them 10 minutes where I'll ask them some questions, give them a chance to clarify their opening statements. The audience will get 20 minutes for questions, and then each debater will get 3 more minutes for their closing argument. The rules are pretty simple: no biting, kicking, hair pulling, or name calling. And debaters will get 2-minute and 1-minute warning marks from our timekeeper. So if we'd like to start.
All right. Thank you very much, Rebecca. Twitter is a revolutionary force for social communication, for it is the closest we've come to humanistic expression over the internet. Like man himself, Twitter is a deceptively complex entity. I'm here to argue Twitter did not revolutionize the way we speak to each other, that's Catherine's realm, but rather the way we forge our internet identities. Gone are the boxes that confine our tastes and the zones where we communicate our opinions. Our loves are no longer confined to lists and groups. Our voice no longer confined to specified walls. Consider the Twitter box not as a status updater, but as a mouth. A pair of lips that miraculously spout images and videos just as easily as they spit opinions, jokes, and songs. Mouth 2.0, if you will. And just as ludicrous as it would be to wear a t-shirt expressing your interests, accompanying this mouth with any constraining element or profile would only compartmentalize the user. Best leave it as God intended. A mouth for expression, accompanied only by an image. Commonly, users choose a picture of their face. Staying true to this simple formula, Twitter does not force you to communicate or partner with only your friends or buddies, for that model resembles no real world I've ever been a part of. Instead, Twitterers merely follow their community, a passive concept that allows for varying levels of interest and activity. I quite often speak/tweet with my friends on issues ranging from movie times to Sarah Palin, but I very rarely bother Jonathan Zittrain with such trivia. Yet, I follow both Kenny and Jay-Z, like in real life, I engage one and reverently watch the other. Finally, Twitter understands the performance aspect of communication. We do not merely speak to communicate. We are not computers. We speak to be heard. That vague concept is perfectly digitized by Twitter. Your Twitter feed is both utilitarian and performance-based, art intertwined with utility. To knock Twitter as trivial or lacking a utility is to say our mouths ought to be portioned off and our reckless approach to communication should be systematic. I vehemently disagree with this assertion and ask this audience to consider man's simple yet complex nature as a cherished gift, and Twitter an enlightened attempt at digitizing this grace. Its only qualifier, the age-old advice we hear from all great orators: keep it brief.
I thank my esteemed colleague for that speech. What it brings to mind, however, is a poem which I'd like to recite for you. Yes, I have 1,000 tongues, and 999 lie. Though I strive to use the one, it will make no melody at my will, but is dead in my mouth. Now, this is from Stephen Crane. And why it just reminded me of that is the fact that we know that most Twitterers, in fact, do not tweet. They're merely passive listeners. So the speech contention that all the walls are gone and this is our new mouth is very interesting. Indeed, it is our new mouth that makes no sound. So just something to think about. Now, when we're talking about the motion today, is it a revolutionary social communication tool or the like? I would argue that, one, it's not revolutionary, and two, it's no longer even a tool for communication. Twitter, whatever it started out as, perhaps as a two-way means of communication, has just become a PR piece. When we talk about people that are joining Twitter, we talk about people that are joining to follow Oprah, who has about 500,000 followers, but she herself only follows 10. So this has become a one-way means to communicate. There's no dialogue here. There's no social communication. This is about as communicative as a billboard or the television. Two, I fail to see how it's revolutionary. Twitter is a jack of all trades and a master of none. It tries. It allows you to do many things, each of which you could do much better using a different tool. Some people say I use Twitter to get information about new blog posts. Great, my RSS feed does that much better. I can use Twitter to find experts on a certain topic who can help me. Well, great, they're going to give you help with 140 characters. You could probably get a little better advice in a forum. You could comment on the fact that, it allows me to find new stories and new links. Yeah, well, you're dealing with abbreviated links, so you're going to end up reading the same story over and over because you can't identify what the story is merely by looking at the hyperlink. So if Twitter's not trying to actually do anything new, and people aren't actually using Twitter, I fail to see how it can possibly be revolutionary, as it's not attempting anything new, and even if it were attempting something new, no one's actually using it. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to bring out the big guns into our argument now, which is my accent. Following on from Sawyer's discussion of how Twitter can be used to express yourself and the broadcasting elements of Twitter, I'm going to talk about how it connects people, how it makes me feel closer to you. First of all, let's be loyally about things and let's do some defining. A revolution is defined as a fundamental change in a power or organized structure that takes place in a relatively short period of time. So, has it been revolutionary? Well, it's certainly done a lot in a short period of time. Created in 2006, that's 3 years ago, it has, according to a survey done for Complete.com in February 2009, 55 million monthly visits from 6 million visitors and is the third most used social network. That's not too shabby for a three-year-old. But how has it affected our organized structures? How has it changed the way that we interact with one another? Until Twitter, our online connections and friendships are very symmetrical in their nature. For example, Facebook. I friend you, you friend me. However, with Twitter, it turned that all on its head, and now it allows for asymmetric relationships. There are four modes of connection on Twitter. I can follow you, you don't follow me. You follow me, I don't follow you. We follow each other, or we don't follow each other, but we can still see what's going on by looking at our profiles. This is pretty revolutionary, and it's very exciting. To illustrate my point, I'll let tweet celeb Tim O'Reilly do the talking. He said recently on his blog, even if you're a minor league celebrity like me, there are many more people who are interested in what you're doing or thinking than you can possibly keep up with. Asymmetric follow is why I use Twitter regularly and Facebook much less. With Twitter, I can find people I'm interested in, whether or not they know me, and learn about their lives and thoughts. Others can include me in their lists. You can become friends with complete strangers by communicating with them or responding with the @messages symbol. It's also worked in many other ways with getting people aware of what's going on quickly and fast. Now, there's benefits and cons to this. But for example, in Moldova recently, there were protests about alleged corruption in the elections there. And many people protested about this. And it's been said that a lot of this was facilitated by Twitter. Now, Ethan Zuckerman's written on how much Twitter perhaps played in this or not. But it has been said that when the cell phone system went down and people couldn't send texts, they were still able to tweet what was going on, getting news out rapidly. It's connecting people that otherwise wouldn't be connecting to the rest of the world. So to summarize, I'd argue that by facilitating a change in the very way we interact with a variety of people, Twitter has revolutionized the way in which we collaborate and understand each other.
I'm afraid I don't have a PhD or a British accent or a lovely beard. So I feel somewhat outclassed by my opposition and indeed my compatriot. But I guess I fail to see what exactly in any of the argument made by my distinguished opposition, how that has really revolutionized anything or changed anything. For instance, you cite the asymmetric nature of communication on Twitter is a revolution, and yet that seems strangely familiar to mainstream media, newspapers, talking heads, where very, very few people are followed by very many, and they don't have much of a way of talking back to them. I would actually say that, if anything, Twitter is a counter-revolution. It's a conservative movement in our communication, away from symmetric communication, away from people talking to each other and a few people talking at each other. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not against Twitter. I don't, you know, as I believe I said, I don't know if we can say that Twitter is bad for society. We don't know if Goatsy is bad for society, and it's been around a lot longer, and is arguably much more interesting. But the point that I would only make is that there isn't much of a revolutionary character to Twitter. It doesn't really change how people communicate. It actually looks almost exactly what communication looks like in real life. It's a power law distribution. 90% of Twitter users account for 10% of the tweets. 10% of Twitter users account for 90% of the tweets. 10% of Twitter users are followed by 90%, and that sort of normal old imbalance that we see all over the place. There's nothing revolutionary about that. There's nothing terribly interesting about that. You can share links quickly, maybe, but it decontextualizes information. It contributes to the soundbite culture. I don't think that there's really a lot good that can be said to it other than the Real Shaq. Honestly, if it wasn't for the Real Shaq, I don't know that I would have a Twitter account. And I think that my cell phone bill would probably be much lower. But I guess I just skeptical, a little skeptical.
Thank you very much, Chris. And thank you to all of our debaters for an excellent path forward into this discussion today. I'd like to ask just a few questions of the pro-Twitter side. I'm curious how you would respond to the accusation or the point that the con side has brought up that 90% of Twitter users sign up and then never use the service. Do you still think that despite this sort of amazing failure rate that Twitter has value?
Well, I think a large part of that high failure rate can be attributed to the way in which Twitter was rolled out. If you look at how Facebook was initiated, it was started at one school. And I know we have a Facebook expert on the other panel, so I'm sure you'll correct any fallacies I may bring up. But it seemed as though Facebook was very well tailored to that group of people, being Harvard undergrads who were looking for maybe a little bit more of a passive way about learning about the people around them, a little bit of a prying kind of perving way of looking at them, watching them from afar, garnering a little bit of an understanding, and giving a little bit back to that community on their own way. From there, it moved on to a larger group of college students, more schools, until it's at the behemoth that it's at today. Point being, it was tailored towards a population who was already ready and willing to take part in social networking. It was also very well compartmentalized. It didn't take much creative energy on one side. It was just, okay, I like music. There's a box for music. I love Coldplay. Oh my God, look at that. Everyone else loves Coldplay too. Twitter comes along and is released for everyone. Everyone gets the opportunity to use it right off the bat. There's maybe a small alpha test, beta test for the nerds out there who are hip to it, but at the end of the day, it came out for everyone. And in doing so, it confused and befuddled many people, as it has confused and befuddled our opponents, in that they couldn't figure out how or why someone would go about doing something like this, just referencing things at random. It's a jack of all trades in that it doesn't actually optimize anything. It's purely frivolous banter. There's nothing to really focus my energy on. So the only ones who really took to it were a small group who, like Shaq, were maybe gifted orators in being able to articulate themselves in a certain way, you know, in a nuanced, short, brief, honest way. You know, we referenced Oprah, who obviously doesn't quite have it together yet. She's, you know, a couple things here and there about her show, but to reference Shaq, I think, is a good point. We get to really understand him. We get to get deep into his soul. We get to understand what makes him who he is. And for that, I think Twitter serves a purpose. It serves a utility that we could one day know more about each other than we all like Coldplay. We could know something a little more nuanced, something a little more closer to the heart. And that's why I think it's taken a good long you know, couple of, I mean, shoot, it's only been 3 years, you know? Give it another 3 years and see those rates. I think people will start to figure out how to briefly and creatively communicate using only one white text box.
It takes time to learn new tools, as we've seen by Facebook. In the past, you know, year or so, you've seen a whole new audience join Facebook. And I think people may have jumped on and signed up, but it's taken them a while to learn how to use it and the benefits of it.
I guess I was intrigued because for a while there, sorry, I thought you were arguing for our side, because it doesn't exactly seem to me that referencing Shaq's ability to just sort of blast information about himself and a whole lot of people not really knowing what to do with Twitter as arguments for it. Do you know what? Twitter reminds me of two things, and one is Snuggies. You know, the besleeved blankets that you sometimes see on late-night television?
I mean, chalk it up to a win for us right now. Snuggies are great.
The slanking?
Can you just...
I've heard it called both things.
Snuggie is what I'm familiar with.
For the newly arrived here, can you just explain a slanket?
Well, it's a blanket that you wear like a coat. And, right, you have, and so you can sit in your couch, and then when you move and things. And the point that I'm trying to make is not that Twitter is composed of plush fabric or will keep you warm at night. The point that I'm trying to make is that I see that commercial every single night, at least 8 times a night. And there is nobody owns one, or the few people who own them don't use them. But everybody gets one because there's a lot of buzz about them.
I have to slightly disagree with you. A lot of people do tweet. It's not that nobody tweets. The statistics in my argument. I mean, I don't think you can say that nobody tweets apart from Shaq.
I did manage to do a little bit of research, and the numbers are actually pretty astounding. Something on the order of 60% of people have never sent a tweet. And according to the author of the Harvard Business School study, who I Facebook messaged intimately, said something along the lines of, 10% own, you know, it's a power law for the follows as well. It's a tremendous amount of people don't use the service. And I'm fine if people go onto Twitter and then they say, I don't have a use for this. This isn't interesting, or I don't want to send any tweets. There's nothing wrong with that. But that's just how most media in the world works. It's mostly one way. And my argument would be that Twitter is mostly one way. Now, sure, you do get a couple activists out there who put it to extraordinarily interesting uses. You talked about the Moldovan stuff, and, you know, Clay Shirky, your mentor, talks about the stuff in Egypt, right, with the democracy activists who tweet out when they're being taken to a secret prison. Those are amazing uses, and they're very interesting, but they are not at all. They can't characterize what Twitter is. Right? There are exceptions rather than the rule. And that's the only point I want to make, is that you can't build a case for a revolution off a couple exceptions.
Even beyond all that, who cares about the number of users in the end? I still am waiting to hear what use it's being put to that's so revolutionary. The Moldovans, I mean, that's been debunked. And in fact, you kind of hinted at that at the end of your speech. You said, oh, you know, they did this great thing. And then, of course, everyone wrote about how that didn't happen. But wouldn't it be great if it did? But even if it did, it wouldn't, I mean, texting went down, so they used it as if it were texting. You did a great, you know, great thing saying there. So great, when one technology goes down, it can be used in exactly the same way as the technology then went down. I still don't see how that's a revolutionary use. I don't care how many people are using Twitter. In the end, I want to know, how are they using it in a way that's different from anything else? We now have 500,000 people following Oprah, and she only talks and follows other celebrities. How is this different than any other use? I still want to see, you know, who cares? 32 million could sign up tomorrow, which, by the way, that was the number of users of Facebook after 3 years, and Twitter is nowhere close. So I'm just a little confused why we're having this numbers debate. I'm still waiting for the affirmative side to tell me a way that Twitter is used that another pre-existing technology is not used and does just as well, if not better.
It comes down, as I said, very simply to bringing me closer to you, in the sense that with Twitter, you have access to people that you normally would not have access to in that way. For example, professionally. Now, I will be very honest. I do not use Twitter for social reasons. I use Facebook more for social reasons. But I made a decision that I was going to sign up for Twitter to follow certain people in my field, to start to say things and put myself out there and start to try and say intelligent things now and again. It happens occasionally. And this, to me, has revolutionized the way that, for example, young professionals or young academics can start to communicate with each other in a way that was never possible before. The great and the good could always talk to you, but now you can tweet and follow them and contribute in a way that perhaps, in a way that goes to everyone, that in a way was perhaps not possible before.
I respectively ask, how is that different than a blog?
It's facilitated it in a much quicker and easier way.
So it's a quicker blog.
Well, I think
it's more accessible.
If I can just jump in for one second, I think some great points have been brought up, but I can also see some of our audience members getting a little restless, and I'd like to give them a chance to shoot their questions out. Then perhaps we can come back to some of these points in your closing statements. Okay. So Joey, I see, has had his hand up. There's also a microphone being passed around if you want to speak into that with your question.
I have a question for the anti-Twitter side. You mentioned that 90% of Twitter accounts have kind of just been left dormant, and that's an indication of kind of how the service isn't being really used. It's kind of bringing us back to the old one-way mass media model. But recently, the New York Times did a study with Technorati, the blog aggregating service, showing that actually 95% of blogs have been abandoned. Would you say that blogging is also trivial?
What I'll say about blogging is that, first off, you're looking at a much, much, much higher magnitude of blogs that have been created. I mean, it's a completely different game. So even though most of those blogs have been left dormant, you still end up with more blogs. But as a technology, I do think they are different things. Now, maybe it turns out that most people sign up to Twitter and they discover they really don't need a micro-publishing service. And I wouldn't be surprised to find out that most people who sign up for, you know, blogger.com find out they actually don't have anything interesting to write about. I've seen those studies. I think that they're the same thing. Now, are you asking me, well, because the implicit assumption in your question is that blogging is a social revolution.
And I'm more asking the question to you. I thought your claim was that since most of the people that sign up for Twitter end up not using it, it doesn't have much use for most people.
I think that that's a slight mischaracterization. I think that it's sort of indicative of the fact that it's not a revolutionary character, but buttressing the first point, which is blogging introduced something new. Blogging, in fact, was a new thing. Before blogging, I mean, the idea of being of all information kind of being filtered through a webmaster, it's kind of a limiting thing. When we're dealing with Twitter, again, even if Twitter were used by every single person to blog, I would still ask the question then, how is it revolutionary if it's just a blog? Blogs are revolutionary and Twitter is just streamlining the process. But that's not the case. The case is that there are still more bloggers than Twitterers, okay, or whatever we're calling them now, Twitterati.
Twits, I believe.
Twits, or Twits, or whatever we want to call them. But the idea here is this, is that if you use Twitter as an RSS feed, if you use it as a blog, if you use it as a texting service, you're just using it as another existing technology. And the motion before us is it's a revolutionary force. And if I have a TV and I create a flat screen TV, I have not revolutionized the way we watch TV. I've merely created a better product.
As a policy analyst, I can't help but think of how this fits in with some of the reading that I've done before. And it seems to bring to mind this Thibault person who basically was saying that people vote with their feet. And it could possibly be that Twitter raises issues around public information and public goods, meaning that it creates the opportunity for us to have better access to information. And I'm not taking a pro or con, just trying to present an objective. And one of the things that I did was kind of look back and said, okay, yeah, there's two premises. There's a preference for revelation, right? That more access to public goods and information provides us with a better sense of what we could have. And then a preference of aggregation, right? So the people who actually go on there start aggregating around a certain idea. Could it possibly be that Twitter is just much like a hammer, right? Very pedantic, But in the hands and in the right hands, it becomes an artistic tool. In the hands of another person, it becomes something that tears down a wall in a particular area. Or in the hand of another person, it becomes a blunt object that is used for dastardly deeds. And that neither one of these binary characterizations accurately get us to a better debate, quite honestly, at this point.
If I could respond, I think it's a great observation. I don't think anyone here is saying that Twitter is useless, and I don't think anyone here is saying that Twitter inherently leads to evil or inherently leads to good. I think there are two interesting things that you said. As a tool for to aggregate data or to aggregate users, I don't see why there aren't many other tools that accomplish that as well. I just, you know, the idea of, you know, the fact that a hammer can be used for good or ill is fine. That's great. So whoever invented the hammer, wow, that was revolutionary. Whoever invented the hammer with a vulcanized rubber grip did not revolutionize the way we used hammers. They just made a streamlined hammer. This is what I keep on returning to, is that Twitter does have options, okay? As Catherine was talking about how it introduces you to a community. I can be on that community in a message board. I remember being on those communities in like electronic blackboards. I remember being on those communities now in blogs. And no one has still answered this question, is that Twitter, what does it do that no other tool uses that people aren't already doing?
I just really quickly want to say, of course I agree that a rubberized grip did not revolutionize the hammer. But is it fair to maybe assume that the Swiss Army knife revolutionized the knife? In that it is not necessarily the best knife, it doesn't cut everything, but it's also a knife that can open a beer, it's a knife that can open a bottle of wine, and it's a knife that could poke a hole in my belt. You know, it is a jack of all trades that everyone carries with them if they're worth their weight in getting it done mentality. So to me, I see it more like that. I see it more as, no, I'm not going to Twitter for my Google reading needs. I have a Google reader. And I'm a very active sharer. I would never, ever leave Google Reader to the, you know, to the craziness of finding cool blogs on Twitter. It's silly. Nor would I leave my email to use Twitter to correspond with direct messages. Nor would I leave any of the things I love doing on the internet to Twitter. But Twitter serves a purpose in that if I wanted to aggregate myself, my identity, all of my internet ethos, all of my internet, leave the word to your own imagination, I would go to Twitter to do that. And those who can do it well get it, if you will. And those who can't, stopped using it. That's my contention.
I'd also like to add that one way in which Twitter has been quite revolutionary in doing something that perhaps we haven't seen before is it allows people to aggregate together and to make their own voices part of a much bigger voice. And really make something that wasn't on the agenda, on the agenda. For example, companies are forced to listen to people now when there's a gripe, because they know on Twitter, if they're upset at AT&T about something like there has been recently, it's going up there, and they have to listen. And on my own, writing a letter to AT&T, well, many people would have to do that, it wouldn't be so fast. But it's revolutionary in getting voices heard together quickly.
So I'm actually interested in kind of the Amazon fail.
I thought you would be.
Line of things. To the extent that no, I mean I read Clay's book. Collective action is interesting, and to the extent to which Twitter facilitates collective action, that's an interesting use, and that is a potentially revolutionary application of Twitter. But the point I want to make is I still think that at the moment that is the exception rather than the rule. And I briefly want to get back to something Antoine was pointing to, which is you were talking about the revelation and the getting information out to people. And one of the things that I'd like to explore is, I don't know if we have enough good data on this to really explore it, is to what extent Twitter does one of two things. Spreads misinformation, mischaracterizations, decontextualized information because it's 140 characters, and B, to what extent it re-entrenches the sort of bad thing that we've seen about the political blogosphere, namely the way in which people tend to go off into the crazy left or the crazy right or the crazy pick your part of the political map, and then go off there and just kind of sulk and go into some sort of crazy netherworld. Cass Sunstein wrote a brilliant but shamefully titled book called Republic.com 2.0, Revenge of the Blogs, in which he outlines a lot of these things. And he notes that, you know, conservative blogs only link to other conservative blogs, and liberal blogs only link to other liberal blogs. And the other day, somebody brought up the thought that, you know, maybe Twitter is a way to help people share information across groups. I would be interested, for your perspective, in investigating whether Twitter networks are broad, meaning they span many different social groups, or whether they're long, meaning that a Marxist in Cambridge has more in common and will get information quicker to a Marxist in Berkeley than he will to a libertarian in Texas. And those are very different social uses, because you could have all sorts of interesting stuff spreading lightning fast through pre-existing political social networks, communicative networks, and still not broaden the debate in a really interesting way. Now, if it were to be shown that Twitter was in some way broadening the debate in a way that really was truly revolutionary, in a way that was against the current tide of the internet to facilitate this, you go off to Daily Kos and I go off to Freeper and we all hang out in our little crazy things and then somebody shoots up a Holocaust memorial. If Twitter can go ahead and debunk that trend and move against that trend, now that would be something that I would like to see. And that would be a revolutionary use.
And I'd just like to put in very, very quickly, just for 1 second, just to answer Catherine's point. Collective action existed before Twitter. Collective action has existed online in many different services. There have been, I don't think we should just imagine that 3 years ago we all sat around helpless and there was never an online petition or blog movement. I would point to Consumerist.
All right. That. Thanks, Andrew. I'd like to get back to audience questions now.
It seems to me that both sides have been conceptualizing Twitter as a series of individual atomized tweets.
I'd be interested in hearing from both sides what you think of the perspective that Twitter is a conversational medium and that it has functions for phatic communication and fosters ambient awareness and intimacy among people.
I believe that it is a great tool for fostering, I'm not going to use the word conversations, but I'm going to use the word connecting people and awareness of what's going on when you otherwise wouldn't be aware of it. In terms of fostering conversations, I would say that the at ability to message people that you wouldn't otherwise be able to be in contact with is a huge thing. And in fact, the Tim O'Reilly quote that I cited, he was saying that, you know, when he put something up on, for example, Goodreads.com, the feedback he gets is way much less than when he tweets about it, and that he actually looks at the responses coming back from people much more on Twitter. And so I would argue that in terms of creating dialogues between people who wouldn't otherwise converse, there's definitely a use for it there.
Yeah, I would also like to add on to that, kind of in my own personal experiences. I use Twitter to promulgate indie rock and roll music through my small record label, Underwater Peeps, is the Twitter name, and we also have a blog, and no one really comments on the blog. Nobody really feels, that attached to us quite yet to, you know, give us their thoughts underneath our blog posts. But we've received some nice chatter through transposing the blog through whatever feed transfer system we got onto Twitter, and subsequently occasionally tossing in little references to bands or record labels that we feel akin to. You know, we've had multiple conversations with other small record labels in America and abroad, and other bands and things of that nature that are just little acclamations, little hello, how are yous about certain things to, you know, continue to develop this pool of music. And many interesting relationships have come from it, and hopefully many more will continue to come just from having the ability to say, hey, that new Bitters album was really sweet and everybody should listen to it. And then a guy from Brooklyn or a guy from New Zealand says, oh, wow, I love them as well. You know, this kind of cultivation creates a group that really wasn't possible for us in any other medium, because other mediums either are long-winded or confined to a certain list or a certain group. Yeah.
So I'm very interested in your question about sort of the as I understand it, maybe a collective consciousness take on things. How do we see, and I could be using these words wrong, a sense of what's going on at the time in this big, larger meta Twitter conversation, and to what extent that sort of happens. And it's interesting. My sense, though, for instance, brief digression, I'm currently following hashtag Berkturns on Twitter, which is where people are tweeting about this conversation. It's all very meta and interesting. And I'm reading through them, and no offense to anyone here, but they're very boring. And the reason I say that...
They're repeating what we're saying.
Right. That's not surprising. What I mean when I say they're boring, and I see this, for instance, whenever you attend a Berkman at 10 conference, right, you always see a lot of people kind of tweeting about what's going on, and they all feel like very forced headlines. And I don't think that's a conversation. Mm-hmm. The sense that I've always gotten reading this sort of thing is that it's not so much a conversation as a bunch of people just kind of yelping 140-character summaries off and hoping that someone would read it. And that, to me, isn't a conversation. Now, I have seen conversations take place on Twitter where people are kind of, like Sawyer brought up, right, where, you know, an indie label will go and they'll talk with some of their friends and they'll reply back to each other. Or you see, again, Shaq doing it sometimes where he's going and he'll be at a restaurant and he'll Twitter out, like, I'm at this restaurant, you know, who wants to come down to, you know, the Rock Hard Cafe, and people show up. But I'm not necessarily convinced that... My sense of Twitter is that you almost need to be a pre-existing celebrity to take advantage of that sort of thing. And I see the eyebrow go up, and I know that you disagree, because anybody can go onto Twitter and kind of, you know, talk back and forth between random people. And there may be some interest in that. I haven't seen a lot of evidence of that in my use of Twitter, in that being a widespread practice or a practice that anyone, except for a small minority of users, are willing to adopt, to treat Twitter like an IRC channel. I'd be interested in seeing if that's going to go further, and I think that my time is up.
We've been talking about whether Twitter is a revolutionary medium, but from an individual perspective, and a lot of the media coverage of it and the hype has actually been from the corporate perspective and from the value to a search community. And so I understand that you're not business owners, but if you are able to reflect on it from that perspective, seeing that maybe not only is there value to you as the person tweeting, but to someone on the other end who's able to see the aggregate of information or not.
I'd just like to talk about this for a second. So basically the idea of tweet is a giant focus group. Or the idea of being able to be a better place to target consumers. First of all, we have to agree that Twitter is – I mean, I would assume we agree – that Twitter is not a fair and random distribution, okay? There's certain Twitterers, okay? There are people that – first of all, you have two subgroups. You have people that choose to do Twitter, people that are elite enough to get it, because apparently the hoi polloi just leave Twitter because it's such a great and revolutionary tool that no one understands how to use it. Number one. And number two, then you have to have people that still get it and still decide to use it and then actually post things that corporate entities care about. So it could be a great tool for a certain amount of data if you are great at deciding what demographic is actually represented by Twitter. But so far, we've seen that Twitter does an excellent job of creating Zerg rushes on companies that may or may not have done something wrong. And then there being a giant, oh, what caused that snafu? More on news, you know, at 10. So, you know, it could be a great way of getting data. Whether or not that data is bad or not, we don't know. And whether or not that data is representative, I think we can all agree, no.
Can I respond?
Yeah.
No one said it's perfect. But it is quick, dirty, fast, and ready. And if you've got something to say about something and you want people to hear your voice, and many people are feeling the same way, then... Twitter, for me, I've seen nothing like it. And to me, it is revolutionary in getting voices of people on topics heard quickly. That's my response to that. And as I say, companies can't fail to listen.
Yeah, I fear Catherine will be upset that I bring this up on our side, but I'm gonna go for it. One could very easily argue that Amazon Fail was a failure because it brought about a very, well, I guess,
puerile and borderline vicious style of discourse through the way in which people were lambasting Amazon as the next coming of the devil. But I see it more as a keen example of exactly what you were referencing, a populace of people who are very prepared and ready to respond to a mistake done by a large corporation. And sure, if later we found out that the corporation was not necessarily hateful, and we could address that man gets a little worked up, woman, man, us, human, gets a little worked up and gets a little mob mentality, I don't think that's a failure of the mechanism. I think it's a failure of us, and we all learn something from that. But it did prove that Twitter is there immediately to respond to a possible injustice. And Amazon did learn that the next time they have somebody coding or translating, they'll be very careful not to make mistakes against already oppressed peoples, because there is a population sitting and waiting and watching. And maybe they express themselves in a bit of a over-exaggerated, borderline, inappropriate manner, but they express themselves. And Twitter did it for them. Twitter created that mode. So I think there's a lesson learned in that, and it could cultivate a more conscious big corporation world that we live in, a corporations that will sit and think, should we really do this right now? What if Twitter freaks out? You know, if that said in one office, in one in one room, in one of these big muckety-muck buildings, then something's being done, you know? I think Amazon fail proves that.
So, yeah, it's getting close to five, so I think if we can take two more questions and then do our closing arguments. I saw Dima's hand go up and Adam's and Nancy's, so I guess three more questions.
Okay, so I really love this, guys. And I just wanted to point out when you mentioned about blogs, blogs, from my opinion, it's what came up when Web 2.0 like first appeared. So you don't talk just about a new software, or you don't talk about just a new way of expression. You talk about a huge new era on the internet, which also promoted a social communication between what you have on your screen and how you can contribute to my readings or to my papers or to my edits and stuff like that. So I don't know if I get it wrong, but my question is that before Twitter, you have blogs and you have wikis and you have Facebook and you have MySpace and maybe some other things which haven't drawn my attention and I'm not aware of this, and you have Second Life. And the thing is that, do you compare Twitter with all these things that you have from the past? Because for me, this is unfair. Because I have a Second Life account, and I have a Facebook account. I don't have it anymore. And I've used Twitter, and I am one of these 90% that have used everything just to know how it is and to be able to tell if it suits me or not. But if I didn't have all this experience from all this software, and Twitter was like the first thing that I saw, for me, it would be revolutionary. And on the other hand, still, if you're trying to see if there is something more on Twitter comparing to the previous software, or if it's just like a repeat of what we have, still, again, for me, it is just for the sense that it has created this group of people discussing for an hour about it and like shaking their like asses from the chair trying to see who's gonna get the microphone first or not. Okay. I don't really like pose a question, but I'm just saying that the fact that it helps for like five people, for me, it just counts on something. And I still say, I don't have a Twitter, and I used it, and I don't know how it works. I don't get it.
Just really briefly, no one is saying necessarily that Twitter does nothing. And I think, unfortunately, if we're talking about something being revolutionary, we do have to talk about what comes before it. Because if you had no idea of any of the tools that came before before the car, and all of a sudden you said, oh, well, this brand of car is revolutionary, and you'd say, well, you know, unfortunately, we've had cars for 50 years. This one doesn't do anything new. It's actually not revolutionary. So I think to answer the question about if something's revolutionary, we do have to look at what came before it. One. Two, just very briefly, yes, Web 2.0 is different than Web 1 because, you know, you have a read-write internet instead of just a read internet. Twitter just continues that. Twitter is just a logical extension, in my opinion, of blogs, which is why it used to be called microblogging. I don't know if it still is called microblogging. I don't really see the difference between a read-write blog and a read-write Twitter that I keep on saying.
I guess if you want to compare blogs to the car, it would only be fair to compare Twitter to the motorcycle. And when the plane crashed in the Hudson River, it took a motorcycle to very quickly respond and take pictures and post to the community that something has happened. And a blog would not have really been a worthy adversary to go about doing something like that. You're not going to sit out on the wing of a plane and think up a couple paragraphs on why it's so gosh darn cold out there. You're just going to write, I'm on the wing of a plane, somebody get over here and get me off the wing of this plane. And I think Twitter, through being able to microtize, sorry, I'm at Harvard, I just said microtize, but through being able to say, to, you know, condense the blog is given it a revolutionary aspect for this mobile internet era we live in.
All right, we can go to Dima.
I just wanted quickly to follow up on your earlier speech, Sawyer. Cool. And I think you kind of contradicted yourself, because you started by saying that it wasn't Twitter that did it, but it was us who did it. And then you finished your speech by saying, and there was Twitter to do it for them. So in this kind of massive glorification...
This was in respect to on Amazon Fail.
On Amazon Fail, yes. Because, I mean, you started with saying that it's a people matter, and you ended up by saying, okay, the platform did it for them.
Yeah.
And I think in this glorification and, like, media hype about Twitter, which will probably die out in, I don't know, half a year, less than that. I mean, where is the human agency in this whole...
Well, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to clarify those statements. Where I would say there was error in the Amazon Fail debacle would be human error, in that passion and emotion overtook one's desire to, or one's the necessity to read up and, you know, to quote your blog, consider the straightest line. And Twitter, you know, these people jumped on Twitter and used this medium to display their emotional distaste with Amazon, where a more educated approach would have been to sit down for a second, think, and then respond using Twitter. I wouldn't lambaste Twitter for the responses of the people. I would instead assert that Twitter gave them the opportunity to show that they exist. And in the future, maybe a little bit more introspection will garner more appropriate tweets.
I should start by saying that I do have a tweet account. I do tweet and follow. But I tend to agree with the skeptics in that it seems to be a different version of already existing tools. It may be more or less functional for a different user. But I want to kind of challenge both sides here and pull back a step, because I think you're making some dangerous assumptions about your own ability to assess the situation, either positively or negatively, accurately. How would you know a revolutionary use if you saw it this early? Either, yes, this is revolutionary, or no, it's not. Because all I'm really hearing is, it works for me, from the positive people, and it doesn't work for me. And what I think the most interesting thing about this debate is that we're having it at the with respect to the numerical levels we're talking about. If there's an immediately obvious revolution, it's that the buzz has been so quick, that the penetrance has been so quick. I mean, and as somebody mentioned, it's not quite what Facebook's was, but the fact that you can talk about 32 million people having tried something within the space of 18 months and 10% of them keeping it, I think that's pretty huge. I mean, imagine if, let's say, it's 1964 and we'd somehow been able to get a desktop computer, you know, the early ones, into 32 million homes. How many of them you think would have stuck with, you know, the TRS-80 or whatever it was, if they just sort of been able to say, oh, hey, I think I'll try one. You know what I mean? The level of investment is minimal. But again, to just to stay more universal, and I want to ask you which, you know, why you think you can make the judgment at this stage. A truly revolutionary use, you wouldn't know it was a revolution until later. You know, the street finds its own uses for things. And if there are people out there who say this tool works, who knows what they, I mean, it's extremely presumptuous to say, I know the uses to which this is going to be put, and they are good or bad or whatever. I mean, I would just say, if you're looking for a revolution, you might, or the absence of one, you might have to be a little more patient first. And that I am skeptical, largely, but given the energy surrounding the medium and the numbers of people interested in it, I'm going to withhold judgment.
May I respond? Yeah. To change the way we do things effectively very quickly, I would argue that Twitter has done that, in the sense that since it's come about in the last 3 years, things have happened that we would never have seen before.
Is that a revolution, though? I mean, think of, and what I'm sort of saying is that you can invent a tool for which there isn't a use yet. That doesn't mean it's a useless tool. It just means it isn't useful yet. Well, sorry. You can invent a tool for which nobody's quite sure. You're like, I just have a feeling it's useful. I mean, think about, I mean, I'm not going to be talking about informational tools here, but think about CFCs. That was an accident of research, and it's like, oh, whatever. And then a long time later, somebody said, wow, these are really good refrigerants. You know, the first person who did a solid-state logic gate was like, yeah, this is kind of cool. And then somebody's like, hey, you know, we could use it to replace vacuum tubes, but...
Are you still saying then that it hasn't, we don't know what it's useful for yet?
I'm saying...
Because I would argue we've got many examples of where it's amazingly been incredibly useful in ways that we've not seen.
Right, but useful doesn't mean revolutionarily useful. And I'm saying that the fact that you do have uses argues that at least it's got potential. But and so that I'm saying, I don't think you're qualified to say that it's revolutionary yet, but I'm also saying you folks aren't qualified to say it's never going to be one. And I just would like to wait.
Sure, and to be...
Because I'm not prescient.
Sure, and just two real quick points. We both addressed, and Chris specifically addressed this, that the motion before us is in the present tense. That if it will become one day a revolutionary force, that'd be a different point. And Chris and I have both said consistently through this debate that, well, we've seen very, very few users use this in a way that could become revolutionary if it spreads to X, Y, and Z. So we've allowed for the fact that if X and Y and Z occur, it might be revolutionary. And yes, it's very difficult to say at a time whether or not a revolution has occurred. I think my point, which is slightly different than my compatriots, is that I still fail to see the giant, I mean, just to put it in the terms that I can understand just really quickly. I grew up with the internet. My brother didn't. Okay. So it's kind of like the elephant in the room that I've always grown up with. So when people say, oh, you can do that on the internet, and I say, well, yeah, of course, because I grew up with it. I always know that there's something to do. It's fine. For my brother, it is the elephant in the room. He's like, oh, my God, I can't believe that happened. I haven't had that moment where I'm like, oh, you can do that on Twitter? This whole time I've been doing this other way, which is much, much harder and does all these other things. I haven't had that, like, shocking I'm the other moment yet. And maybe it'll come up, but to me that's what, like, a revolution is. When I suddenly find myself going, my, the world has changed and I need to reacquaint, like, update my skill set.
Isn't that viewpoint predicated on this assumption that revolutions happen to everybody at the same time?
No, not at the same time. That's my whole point. That actually is my whole point, that it doesn't happen to everyone at the same time, and when those people feel left out, this is the movement that forces things, that it doesn't need to be one day 100%, one day 100% the other way. Not that at all. I'm just saying that even when I talk to other Twitter users, okay, by and large, the uses they describe to me, I get a little confused and I just say, explain to me how that's different than this. And that tends to be the end of the conversation. I'm not saying that Twitter has to be a horrible thing. I'm not saying Twitter can't grow to become something, because anything can grow to become anything. But I'm just saying at the current moment, I don't see the Twitter revolution.
The only point that I would like to make do we have closing statements?
Let's move right into those closing statements. Okay. You can start.
Sure, I'll start. The first closing statement I would like to make is that, Adam, I actually liked your example of CFCs because they were invented and they found an accidental use as a refrigerant, and then they destroyed the ozone layer. And I'm interested in seeing if Twitter takes a similar path. and so I guess I think that Andrew and I may have some slightly different opinions on Twitter. I guess if I could sum up in a closing statement, what I would like to say is this. And again, present tense, state of what's going on now. When I look at the data that have been released from the Harvard Business School study that just came out or any of these other things that TechCrunch or whatever ran, what I see is this. A tremendous amount of people sign up for Twitter and then don't use it. The people who stick with it primarily follow a very unidirectional, asymmetric communication pattern that is not revolutionary in the sense that it resembles a lot of what the real world looks like, which is a couple talking heads and then a whole bunch of people watching. Now, there are some interesting conversations that may be percolating. Like Alice pointed out, there are some things that may start happening in the space that spread to a broader group of people as opposed to the exception. If that happens, I'm willing to revise my current position. At the end of the day, though, I don't think that, at least at the end of this day, I don't think that we can safely call Twitter a revolution or a force for revolutionary change for social communication, or frankly, whatever the question of this debate is that I've long since forgotten. Because to me, it looks like we have a lot of asymmetric patterns, and we have a lot of people signing up for Twitter and then leaving it because they don't know what to do with it and they don't have a use for it. That's the same sort of pattern you saw with Second Life. Now, you didn't see that with Facebook. People got into Facebook and they stuck with it largely because they had a use for it. It was something that they could use. It was something that they intuitively understood why it was important. If people aren't feeling the same sense when they sign up for Twitter, and if people are dropping it, then I think that it's going to end up, my opinion is that at the moment, to me, Twitter resembles nothing more than something a lot like Second Life, which is a lot of media buzz, kind of a cool space with some interesting implications where some mildly interesting things happen in certain specific exceptional situations. But overall, it's a lot of media buzz and marketing, and I just really enjoy following Shaq. And that, to me, is not a revolution.
All right. Well, I think a lot of our most recent aspects of this debate have revolved around the question itself, is Twitter a revolutionary force in social communication? And I would argue that the question does make room for the assumption that Twitter will become, a revolution bigger than we see today. You know, and you know, they offer the question, how is it any different than anything else? I offered the solution, potentially the quick response time in which news can be released and disseminated throughout the populace. I offered the solution, the quick response time in which the people can respond to a big company that they think is up to no good. I think these are two keen examples of Twitter acting alone and acting independently as a new and interesting force. And as the world turns and as the internet speeds up and becomes more omnipresent, I cannot even begin to imagine the ways in which Twitter will proliferate in the future. I mean, if you are a subscriber to nerdy blogs such as myself, you've seen the washing machine that tweets you when it's done. You've seen various other little knickknacks bringing themselves into the internet and becoming a world in which we are ever more connected. And that could be a scary realization, but I think Twitter is going to be utilized in many wonderful ways to come. And as the internet becomes more omnipresent, and as we move from the third generation to the fourth, and eventually to the fifth, which some theorists would consider a world wide web of omnipresent internet, in which I could tweet you from the top of Mount Everest, then Twitter could only exponentially improve in its potential. It could act as a way in which we communicate from anywhere, in a way in which we communicate small emotion, big political thoughts, funny pictures, or music between like-minded souls. And I think as the internet progresses and as Twitter retains those who are now cultishly adhering to it and brings in more who start to realize its utility, its maybe disguised, maybe nuanced utility, it can only grow in use. Thanks.
So I've really enjoyed this debate, but to close it, I'd like to just return to my initial points, which I still don't see having been addressed. We're talking about that this is a revolutionary tool for social communication. I've talked about how it's not revolutionary. You have a washing machine that tweets you. I have a car alarm that pages me. I have a refrigerator that texts me. I could be on the top of Mount Everest and send a tweet. I can be on the top of Mount Everest and send a text message. Text messages are immediate. So are tweets. I still fail to see what aspect of Twitter is so amazingly revolutionary. We talked about how it's a great way to disseminate bad information. There's a lot of great ways to disseminate bad information. There's a lot of ways that you can make sure that a company gets death threats sent to it. If you want to look at the John Engel case, I mean, we talked about how Amazon fail. You know, when a company just maybe made a mistake. We've seen examples of just out and outright fraud when a villain claimed to be an innocent, and everyone on Twitter, because 140 characters breeds instant credulity, jumped on board. So, number one. Number two, the question that I keep on talking about is are people really communicating via Twitter? When we look at the use pattern, it's not that different than Dig. It's not that different. It's not that different than Dig. You have a very small number of users with enormous number of followers that are sending messages one way. How is this different than a radio station? How is this different than television? I think it's very interesting that in the last throes of this debate, we've now turned to, well, what will Twitter become 7 years from now when, you know, we've all learned how to, you know, transmute lead into gold? I'm not sure what it'll be in 7 years from now, and I don't want that to be my role. Could Twitter develop into something? Sure. Cheese graters could develop into something within 7 years, and I don't want to have to debate that. The question that I keep going to, okay, is Twitter might be able, in certain circumstances, to speed up your ability to reach a certain audience. Okay, if all those coincidence of wants all line up together, that's great. What we've created is a great tool to allow a few people to transmit pretty crazy opinions and help convince other people to join in their, you know, reindeer games. I don't think that this is a great development one way or the other, but it's certainly not revolutionary. Thank you.
Final word. I'd like to thank Rebecca for organizing this, and also to my fellow debater and my worthy opponent, say, for that. This has been great fun. I'm going to keep this short and simple. Never before have we seen or been able to mobilize people together to make their voices heard. Never before have we been able to feel so close to Shaq. Never before have we been able to come together on topics that interest us, to be able to dive in and out of discussions, to feel close to people in far parts of the world so quickly. And I take the point that has been tweeted. It's not all about speed. It's about connections and collaborations in ways that have never been seen before. And yes, in the future, we may see it as something completely different or as something much bigger. But right now, this is unprecedented. And it has changed the way that we connect. Thanks very much.
I'd like to thank all of our debaters for the time and effort they've put into this. I also want to bring up one point that actually no one mentioned, which kind of surprised me, which is the effect that Twitter is having on the way people relate to their governments. We talked a lot about people relating to corporations, but some of you may know that the Israel consulate has been particularly active on Twitter, letting people tweet to them. They're replying a lot. And I mentioned that in a tweet about 20 minutes ago, that I was just curious what people thought about the Israel consulate. And they replied to me 7 minutes after I tweeted and said that they're glad to be the subject of our debate. So if anyone has thoughts about that, send them to the Israeli consulate. Thank you again for your patience. I know it's extremely hot in here. I'd like to see if we could collect any remaining votes that are out there from before the debate started, and then we can get the final vote and see where we stand. So the results of our vote are that before the debate, it was 8-4 in favor of no. And now, somewhat curiously, it's 8-5 in favor of no. I'm personally counting that as a win for the yes side. But you guys can take that however you like. So thank you once again to everyone who participated. Maybe no minds were changed.